Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
It's rolling great. I believe this is the, we're on the back nine of these, right? We've done 16. We got 16 more to go.
Well, you're talking about how many we've recorded.
How many we've recorded.
Yeah, but that's not relevant to the listeners.
No, I think that's interesting to them that we have, that we've done 16.
No, but they haven't, this isn't the 16th one that they've heard yet. So,
well, maybe, can you make sure this is the 17th episode? Can you make sure?
We spin a wheel. Yeah. We do it random. It's not like Run App where we just cook the books to do whatever we want to do on the podcast.
I don't think we've ever cooked a single book. If we cooked the books, you think we'd be doing a...
We are the back nine if we were going 32-1, though, because today we're discussing the 16th-ranked Los Angeles Rams. So we have reached the first, the upper half of teams, although we've already done a bunch of the upper half of teams, obviously. Although, Keith, you have them all the way down to 20, so not a big fan of the Rams are you today.
I'm fine on the Rams. I just think their upside is probably fourth out of four in the division.
All right. Well, we have a Rams fan here, or we have a Los Angelino anyway. We'll find out if he's a Rams fan or what the story is. Josh Lemer, welcome to 32 Fans. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going, Alex and Akiva? Thanks for having me on.
Is this your first appearance since the ice cream tournament?
I believe so. A couple of the trivia games I was on, if that counts. Yep.
You're an impassioned advocate for triple caramel trunk or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, triple caramel crunch.
Crunch, yeah.
And have you eaten it since? Have you ended up eating it since the ice cream tournament?
I have, indeed.
It's hard to find. Choice. Can't find it here.
I did find it in the grocery store once, and so I definitely was like, oh, I got to buy this. But really, my passion for triple caramel crunch was mostly me. I needed somebody to advocate for. I needed one of the flavors to advocate for. And because I just really didn't want cookie dough to win, because cookie dough is such a boring flavor to me. And so I just really, you know, Oberon style, I was just like, I will be your champion so we can defeat this foe. So,
you went for a Game of Thrones comparison. I was going to say, you know, similar to the election, where a lot of people's attitude is more they're anti one candidate than for the other one necessarily.
I mean, that's a good comparison too. Yeah. So I think triple caramel.
Which do you think is more objectionable, cookie dough or Donald Trump?
Well, I think the answer to most any question that says what's more objectionable and one of the options is Donald Trump, that's the answer.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Which would you rather eat, though? Probably, yeah, probably cookie dough.
That's
all right. So Josh, so you've lived in LA your whole life, is that accurate?
I've lived in Southern California my whole life, Orange County, and then LA.
Yeah. Orange County is part of LA to us.
You didn't think Anaheim deserved its own Mount Rushmore despite having two different teams that each have won championships this century.
Well, that's how I really feel. So I guess the question is, were you like a Rams fan at birth and then you lost them for 20 years?
Yes.
And then how did that work?
So what happened was my dad, hardcore Rams fan, his whole life, and he took me to the games growing up. I was 7, 8, 9 years old, and had posters of Eric Dickerson and Jim Everett, stuff like that. We were all in. And then, if you remember, the team then moved to St. Louis in 95, and my dad was so furious. And if you remember, the owner of the team at the time was a woman named Georgia Frontier, and she had inherited the team after her husband's death. Carol Rosenblum was the owner. That was her husband. And she's someone that has... before that had like 5 marriages before that and like 2 afterwards.
Carol Rosenblum was the Colts owner that moved them from Baltimore to Indianapolis. Is that correct?
Yeah. And then he switched teams.
And then in the '70s, he was the owner of the Rams. And then he died in mysterious circumstances, which most people think are murder. And there was some speculation, especially with unhappy LA fans, that Georgia Frontier was somehow involved in that.
Allegedly.
And so, yeah, allegedly. So I remember I was 9 years old and I'd been going to these Rams games with my dad, and my dad, who's very, you know, reserved, he's usually very good about knowing what's appropriate to share with children or not. He was so incensed that he straight up told me, you know, sorry, the Rams are gone. They're moving to St. Louis because of that horrible woman who murdered her husband. And I was like 9 years old, like, oh my God, no. So they moved away. And then, you know, I grew up without a team and I became kind of a football agnostic. I didn't really have a team. There was nobody in LA. I've lived in Southern California my whole life. There's absolutely
How did you
nobody.
Feel in 99 when the greatest show on turf becomes, you know, the best team in the league?
It was infuriating.
Yeah.
It was infuriating because it's like you couldn't have hung around for just a few more years. And so I still followed football, but it was more like, okay, let me focus on my fantasy teams and college players from my alma mater and wanted to see them do well. And eventually I kind of was like, okay, I guess I should be a Chargers fan. It's kind of weird because I'm not a Padres fan, but they're the only Southern California team. And so I was kind of invested in them a little bit, like with LT and when Rivers was coming up. But I was always hoping to get the Rams back. And whenever there was speculation about a team moving to LA, like they were talking about the Jaguars possibly moving here, I was like, okay, well, I'll take it. But I was really hoping the Rams would come back because, you know, that is my childhood team. And so then they did, and it was ecstatic. And then I had kind of sort of been a Chargers fan, but I wasn't super into the team, you know, as much as I am for other sports. So it was kind of like, okay, well, now my high school sweetheart is back. So I've been kind of seeing you, you know, Chargers, but now we kind of have to break things off. And then they made that decision very easy because in a move of absolute desperation, they moved to LA in a move that no one liked out of pure desperation. And so basically it's like, okay, my high school sweetheart who was taken away from me because her wicked stepmother had her move across the country. Now all of a sudden, love my life is back. And so person I've been seeing, the Chargers, sorry, I gotta break things off. And their response is, oh yeah, well, we're gonna abandon our friends and family and move into your apartment complex. And it's like, oh geez. So that was easy to cut the cord. So basically a move of desperation. The Chargers were basically like Cat Ederson trying to keep the Hayden Moss at the
Survivor reference
adjustments.
You know what, Josh, so you're essentially living in the same, I'd say almost apartment, not even apartment complex as your ex.
It's
very awkward. One of those like famous ones, Alex, in Brooklyn, where you have like the legally mandated like wall down the middle of the one apartment.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to note for the record, the 32 fans' position on the death of Kara Rosenbloom.
Yeah.
I'll read from Wikipedia here. While swimming at Golden Beach, Florida, Rosenbloom drowned on April 2, 1979. He was 72. The Dr. Joseph H. Davis, the Dade County coroner, stated, quote, "There is not one scintilla of reason to believe this is anything other than an unfortunate accident," end quote. A PBS Frontline documentary called An Unauthorized History of the NFL suggested that Rosenbloom, a known gambler, may have been murdered. Dun, dun, dun. Son Steve Rosenbloom stated that his father was a poor swimmer who never went into water alone, telling Frontline, "If he went alone that day, he was breaking the habit of a lifetime." The final conclusion was that Carol, who had been one of the first heart bypass patients, had suffered a heart attack while swimming. Witnesses at the scene in the Miami Coroner's Office, the Miami Chief of Police, confirmed this finding. After Rosenbloom's death, his second wife, Georgia Frontier, inherited a 70% ownership stake in the Los Angeles Rams. Rosenbloom's five children inherited the other 30%.
And, of course, she's from St. Louis, so she wanted to get
Frontier's inheritance came as a surprise to many fans, including your father, apparently, though not to close friends and family, it says in parentheses, who thought Steve Rosenbloom, the former owner's son from a previous marriage and the Rams vice president, would take a leadership role in the team's management. It was not a surprise to close friends and family because Rosenbloom was trying to take advantage of the widow's tax exemption. There was a draft of Rosenbloom's will that was to be changed so that the team would be left to his son Steve, however, it was never executed. Over 900 people attended his funeral, blah, blah, blah. We don't care about that. Okay. So, yeah. So fans were highly suspicious, but yes.
Especially LA fans. I'm sure St. Louis fans think she's a saint, but...
But it was a long con because it took her 15 years to move the team to St. Louis.
Well, it takes a while to get those moves done.
I guess,
always have the intention. So,
yeah, listen, if you do it right afterwards, then people are going to get suspicious about the meaning of his death. So you got to mourn for a few years before you move.
I guess so. By the way, can I talk about how insane it is that I've lived in Southern California my whole life. There was not a single person that I've ever met who, when the Rams moved to St. Louis, they just stayed on and were a St. Louis Rams fan. That's like,
I can name you one, Adam Carolla.
No, yes, that's what I was about to say. So Adam Carolla is, if you thought that that was a thing that people liked to do in LA and there was people who had that mentality, absolutely not. Adam Carolla is the only time I've ever heard of anyone doing that. It's like a Seattle fan rooting for the Thunder. So he's a bizarre anomaly. I just wanted to get that on the record in case people assume that there was people like that out there. But anyway,
By the way, Kara Rosenbloom, it says on Wikipedia, has the greatest winning percentage in league history for an owner across both the Colts and the Rams.
That's
the
impressive Rams, because Kraft wasn't with the Patriots during a lot of the lean years.
Yeah. I wonder what Kraft's is. Yeah, so because the Rams were very good in the 70s. They lost, I think, the NFC Championship game like 4 years in a row to the Vikings and the Cowboys or something like that. They kept losing in the playoffs. But
they had no quarterbacks. They would lose like 9-0.
They'd go like 10-4 every year, though.
Yeah.
I think I've said this before, but on the podcast. But, Keeve, I'm sure you're familiar with the Packers-49ers playoff game in 98, I believe, the Terrell Owens game.
Owens, yeah.
Yeah, so I was watching that in the Yeshiva University morgue television lounge. And a bearded gentleman from Los Angeles was like standing right next to me and was applauding really loudly during the game. And I turned to him angrily because it seemed like he was cheering for the Packers. And of course, I hated the Packers. I said, "You're not a Packers fan, are you?" And he said, "No, I'm just a fan of good NFL football." And I remember I'm like, "Oh my God, I hate people from LA." But he was an orphan, so he didn't really have a chance.
Didn't have a team.
Yeah.
What are we supposed to do?
Yep. All right. So you got a team now. This is a team that, you know, over the last couple of years, really invested like in a win now mentality more than just about any team we've ever seen. You know, they really try to take advantage of the window with Goff and his rookie contract. And, you know, they made it to the Super Bowl, obviously, 2 years ago where they fell flat against the Pats. And then last year, the bottom sort of fell out. The offensive line looked very bad. The lack of depth really emerges a serious problem. They sort of doubled down, you know, trading for Jalen Ramsey. And, you know, you haven't had a first round draft pick since 2016, which really makes it hard to fill the gaps. And now, all of a sudden, you're perceived as a middle-of-the-pack team. We have you at 16. Keith has you all the way down at 20. And, like, all of this smoke that was being blown up Sean McVay's ass a couple of years ago, it might seem premature. If this team is sort of destined to be in, like, the 8-8, 9-7 range, then, you know, do we have to take back all the wonderful things? And I'm sort of happy about the fact that I did not jump on the McVay bandwagon as much as Keeve and some others did. I mean, I was impressed with him, but I'm like, you know, let's
I will say you were a McVay skeptic. I just said
you can't be a top five coach in the league before you've done it for a couple of years, right? I mean, we've done the same thing in Atlanta with. So, you know, tell us, how do you feel as a Rams fan? Do you feel like you've sort of, you know, the window is sort of closed or?
I'm going to probably be more down on this year's team than most of the other fans that you've brought in. I think that the ramifications of I didn't even mean to do that. But the ramifications of Goff's contract and, you know, the penny pinching, and then the Gurley, we were still on the hook for Gurley, although I think releasing him was a good thing. And there's some reason for optimism with this year's running back stock. But I mean, we lost, we got rid of Gurley, which I think is going to be an addition by subtraction, which I can get into later. Corey Littleton, I think, is actually the biggest loss from the inside linebacker. Right now, our inside linebacker core that we brought in to replace him is not great. We brought in Leonard Floyd, who's kind of, you know, former number 9 overall pick, who's kind of a bust, but he's all right. But and then Dante Fowler, we lost him and didn't get a great replacement, and Eric Weddle retired, and even though he was an old man, his intelligence and leadership is really going to be missed. So we lost a lot. Obviously, Brandon Cooks on offense as well, but I don't think that loss is too huge. But especially Littleton, not being able to re-sign him, that's going to hurt, and then we're going to get hurt more in this next offseason because there's going to be some contracts. You'd assume they're going to keep Jalen Ramsey, and that'll be a focus, but that means that I don't want to look too far ahead to 2021, but it's gonna be hard to keep John Johnson. We're gonna have to send him to IKEA, unfortunately, and it's gonna be hard to keep that wide receiver core together, which I think is pretty good right now. But going back to this year when we still have those guys, there's gonna be a lot of losses for money reasons because of the win now mentality, so we're really paying for it. And this year, you know, I'm hoping, I actually think that Keeve's ranking of 20 is probably closer to what I'm expecting. So I think the offense was really sputtering last year, and I do think there's a big room for improvement. We bring in, like I said, I think that the loss of 2019 Todd Gurley is not a big loss. Losing 2018 Todd Gurley is a big loss, but I think that we're actually set up better because in some ways Gurley, he played every game, but he was bad. He never cracked 100 yards. He was always feeling bad and wasn't sure if he's ready to go. And I think that really stymied McVay in terms of he didn't know if he was going to get full Gurley or not. And sometimes he'd have to change his plans like mid-game or going into games. Now he knows what we have, our running back core. We got with our second round pick, we took Cam Akers, who is going to eventually hopefully be the a three down back, probably not in the first half of the season, but going into it, you know, Daryl Henderson is more of a switch guy and he just got hurt, but he's not very physical. And Malcolm Brown is a veteran who is just,
yeah. If Cam Akers any good, he'll beat out Henderson and Brown.
Yeah. This is not great competition for him. So if he can put it together, I think that's going to be strong. He's got a little case of fumbleitis in training camp, so hopefully he can overcome those rookie jitters. Another promising rookie is Van Jefferson, who's been looking really great by all accounts. And
is he the new Brandon Cooks, Josh?
I think eventually the plan is for him to get there. He's older for a rookie. He's 24. So he's much more ready. People are saying he's better than Josh Reynolds. Josh Reynolds, obviously one of those guys that everybody's owned in fantasy at one point, because the Rams wide receivers always seems to be some injury. And then it's like, oh, Cooper Kupp got hurt. Oh, pick up Josh Reynolds. So he's somebody who's been on everybody's fantasy team. Obviously Woods and Kupp are super solid. And I think there's reason for optimism the third year with Goff under McVay, and there's continuity there with the receivers, even though Brandon Cooks is gone. I don't think that's a big loss at all, and especially comparatively. And so I think that should be exciting. We have two really great tight ends in Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett. I think Higbee obviously came on and was the best tight end in the league for the last 5 weeks of the season. And he got like 100 yards several weeks in a row. And Gerald Everett is more than capable as a starter. So I would expect him to get traded. So maybe we can find a piece for that, because he's definitely he would be starting on a lot of other teams at the tight end position. So the big question mark for the offense is on the offensive line. And we have good guys there, but it seems like they're having trouble getting cohesive as a unit.
Well, so here's the problem. Last year, PFF ranked the Rams offensive line 31st in the league.
Wait, can I tell you something weird, though? Yeah. I don't know if you have this, Alex. Pro Football Outsiders has them as the best passing last year.
Passing. PFO versus PFF, interesting.
Well, but so they allowed the fewest sacks in the league, if I'm not mistaken, right, Josh? I think they only allowed like 22 sacks or something crazy.
Well, they re-signed Andrew Whitworth, but he's turning 39. Man. And it's a problem, I think, when your best offensive lineman is 39 years old.
Well, ideally, the best offensive lineman should be Rob Havenstein. But he, for some reason, after several years of Pro Bowl caliber play, last year he fell off a cliff. This year, he's been living or spending a lot of time trying to get himself back in shape. He's been spending time with Whitworth specifically. I think he like moved in with him or something for a little while. And all reports are that for whatever happened to Havenstein last year, that he is going to hopefully have a bounce back year and get into that Pro Bowl form. So he should be the best offensive lineman, and the other spots are kind of up for grabs. And we do have some depth there, because Bobby Evans and David Edwards had to start because of injuries last year. So now they're going back to the bench. So we do have some sophomores with some experience. So I'm hoping it comes together, but that's the biggest question mark on offense for sure, is because we have solid guys and we have decent depth, but they just don't seem to be clicking as a unit. On a scrimmage the other day against the starting offensive line, Aaron Donald had 5 sacks.
And it's some although of Aaron that Donald is, can make many offensive linemen look bad.
It's a good you bring this up, Josh, and I was thinking an interesting thing that we could be asking people who, you know, are really following the minute-to-minute of training camps, because that's all we have to go by before the season starts, is like, who is dominating between your offense and your defense, if anybody? Like, certainly on the Jets, their defense is absolutely destroying their offense. They're pushing it around. It would shock me if the Rams defense wasn't pushing around their offense. Aaron Donald seems like the type of guy who goes at least 90% in practice, and 90% of Aaron Donald's still like the best player in the NFL. So, Jester, do you have an idea of between the Vikings offense and defense, who is winning that battle in training camp or not?
Yeah, I mean, the defense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it would be hard. Offenses would be really good to like split open a defense in.
Well, here I think is, you know, the offensive line, obviously that's a problem. But to me, the other issue is, we talked about how, you know, you were trying to win during Goff's rookie contract era. And, you know, in 2017, with McVay bursting onto the scene, the Rams have a phenomenal season, and Goff was the number 7 ranked quarterback for me in the league with a QB, Chester QBR 115. 2018, he drops to 10th with a Chester QBR 108. So, you know, a little bit of a drop, but still a very solid quarterback, certainly a quarterback you can win with. Last year, he dropped to 21st, and his CQBR was 98, which means he was just a little bit below league average. Paying a quarterback to be league average, you know, a 9-figure contract. I mean, the reality is that, you know, every quarterback who comes up for a deal, that's just what you're going to have to pay them. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you get, you know, an Andy Dalton or even a Joe Flacco. And, you know, it's sort of, you don't really have a choice because when you have a legitimate starting quarterback, you sort of have to pay him. But you're really going to be hamstrung if you're paying a guy almost $30 million a year to be a league average quarterback. And that's and that's with this supposedly yeah. genius offensive coach who should be coaching him up, you know, to whatever his, you know, best possible version of himself is.
Yeah. Is there a scenario where they can cut ties with Goff if he really struggles this year?
Ooh, cutting ties with Goff. That's not something that I really thought. Was
and then what would they do? They go try and find like the Cam nothing. Newton type guy, you know, on free agency.
There's nothing. Our backup is John Wolford, who's looked. Yeah, you've never heard of him, and there's that's not an option. Jared Goff will be on this team going into next year for sure, and unless it's an unmitigated disaster, but I don't think it will be. I do have optimism. I mean,
Josh, who is the second best quarterback in this division after Russell Wilson? It's a good question, Keith. Who do you think?
It's based on last. I mean, it's Jimmy. I mean, Jimmy is probably better than Goff, I have to say. And then,
but I would put Goff fourth is maybe what Alex is getting at. I think you had.
Well, I said on the Cardinals podcast, I think Kyler Murray's hype is a little bit preceding him.
Okay, yeah, fine. But I still think
Murray has
than
the
Goff.
Most upside, possibly, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that yet you could say he's better. You know, Goff
well, not,
also yeah. or solid.
He's never lost a Super Bowl, unlike the other three quarterbacks in his
Correct.
Division.
Yes,
but
I think it's a
Murray
little
third. And Murray might be a second by the end of the season.
No, I mean, at the end of the season, sure. But right now, I think as much as I have issues and reservations about Goff, you can't put Kyler Murray ahead of him just yet. Maybe at the end of the season might be a different story. But Jared Goff did get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
and
but he does have the advantage of Sean McVay. He has the advantage of, even with Cooks gone, Woods and Cooper Kupp are among the best starting wide receiver duos in the league. You have, you know, Josh Reynolds, Van Jefferson, you talked about, Tyler Higbee. So he still has a lot of weapons to throw to.
Right, and like I said, I think the offense. I think we're really solid everywhere, and we're on offense on the offensive line. We have solid personnel, but it's just a matter of them clicking together. And so last year was the offense really struggling. A lot of it was because of a lot of the offensive line injuries, and we had to play rookies there. And then the defense kind of had to step up. Other than the two random games where we got lit up by the Ravens and Tampa for some reason. But for the most part, the defense was the strong suit last year. And this year, I think the scales are going to shift a little bit. I think the offense is going to get stronger and the defense is going to get worse. I mean, obviously we have a solid defensive end, solid cornerback situation because Brockers, who was going to leave and then he failed a physical, so now he's back. And that's solid. But the inside linebacker is a huge question mark. We have Micah Kizer starting there, and he's never played a meaningful NFL snap before in his life after getting benched his rookie year and then was hurt last year. It's going to be really, really strange. We drafted some guys.
Yeah, the loss of Littleton, I think, really hurts because their linebackers are not deep.
No, they're just guys. It's not anything special. Ebukam is pretty good, but on the outside, but on the inside, that's going to hurt. And I think it's not going to be a terrible defense, but we're really going to have to hopefully find a diamond in the rough to play inside linebacker, or else it could be ugly and it could be kind of hard. Obviously, you know, there's only so much downside when you have Aaron Donald who counting as basically two guys on the field for you. But so you don't have to have stars in the other positions, especially inside linebacker, but certainly losing stars and is never a good thing. And just having some random guys, some combination of Leonard Floyd or Troy Reader is not going to go well. and in my opinion, but hopefully the strengths. It's really a stars and scrubs defense. And now that some of our solid guys have left, Dante Fowler left as well. And that was more of a understandable signing, but really the lack of Littleton is what really concerns me the most about the defense. And then not signing anyone who can kind of fill in for that. But, you know,
I like the stars
terrible.
And scrubs thing, Josh, because, you know, if you remember last year on this podcast, I did a, like a core eight, which really became a core 10 of like, you're the 10 best players. And the Rams, like, obviously you start with Donald. Goff is, you know, essential. Jalen Ramsey, like, you can go, you know, man for man once you get to five or six. But, yeah, once you get past, like, the very good players, there are very few good players on this team. There's a lot of, like, you know, Robert Woods, a good player. I guess Cooper Kupp's a good player. Maybe one of the rookies who are, you know, Jefferson or even the running back Akers is good. But, like, there's not a lot. There's a lot of older, mediocre players, and there's a lot of, like, non-prospect young players. It's an interesting roster composition, which, as you said, you know, part of it's because you're paying your quarterback and a few other players so much money. Really, that's how it has to be.
Okay, but let me ask you a question.
You know what? They're not attracting the guys that New England would attract in their heyday. They're not getting like, oh, this guy's here on a, you know, a steal, like $3 million, 1 year deal veteran. They really don't have anybody like that.
Well, they're not going to the Super Bowl every year the way the Patriots are. So why would they?
No, I understand. But like the smart teams have that. And, you know, even Dallas, I don't, you know, like, you know, Dallas has like six guys this year that are playing for them on, you know, maybe under market value contracts. Like, they really don't have anybody like that right now, the Rams.
Akiva, when we look back on this era, who do you think will be sort of the defining lineman of this era? Will it be J.J. Watt or will it be Aaron Donald?
I think it's Aaron Donald. I think Donald's highs, first of all, Watt is it's just so unlikely to play, like, you know, 100 more games in the league, let's say.
Because 2 years ago, or Aaron, at any point until the last maybe 18 months, you would have absolutely said Watt.
Yeah, I think I it's funny because,
but Donald's never really missed time, and Watt, you know, was always.
It's Donald. It's going to be Donald, and that's not to take anything away from Watt. Watt could retire.
No, they're both
today,
first ballot Hall of Famers.
But Donald, you know, is very close to mortality. You know, he's moving away from just being a Hall of Famer at this point.
Well, I think Watt is that also, frankly.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But he could use to play a little bit more. Listen. Yeah. Well, Reggie White and Bruce Smith played the same position at the same time. Yeah. You know, got almost equal honors. I mean, I think everybody.
Well,
I
think that's a great example because I think Bruce Smith is supremely sort of underrated. Yeah. Because of the fact that he played at the same time as Reggie White.
Yeah, people don't realize Bruce Smith is like in the top couple players all time in terms of all pros. And they were like legitimately earned
MVP,
all pros,
which is very rare for a defensive player.
Well, yeah, Bruce Smith, he's very proud of the Chester MVP.
Of course
MVP.
He is, yeah.
That's on his mantle for sure. Yeah.
The Dr. Z, who would watch tape, had Bruce Smith also, I think, nine times or something as an all pro. Like, and he would like to pick new guys. So it was like, you're picking these guys reluctantly. Yeah, so that's the only thing I can really compare it to, where there's two dominant guys at the same time.
So is
Whitworth a Hall of Famer, Alex? Do you have Whitworth in the Hall of Fame?
Hold on. I got to open up my tackle ranking.
What were you going to say, Josh, while Alex looks up?
I was about to say, another thing that's happening is there's been a ton of turnover on the coaching staff. Yeah. So obviously we had...
Because anybody who goes near gets a job.
Yeah, but not Wade Phillips, apparently. He hasn't signed anywhere else. Maybe he's thinking of retiring. But I think that... You know, in previous years, there's kind of been this mentality where you have, you know, John Fossil, a special veteran, special teams guy, and then you have Wade Phillips, and kind of you had a super young head coach in McVay, and he had these wizened old, you know, Jedi leaders to as his assistant coaches to get that leadership. This year, that has totally turned over. So we have a new defensive coordinator in Brandon Staley, who was the Broncos linebackers coach, and he's a guy in his 30s. We hired Kevin O'Connell, the former backup to Tom Brady, as our offensive coordinator, which is obviously not going to be the same as offensive coordinator in most places.
Because he's not Sean a play calling offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Sean McVay is the offensive coordinator. Kevin so is just a
but you know he's whisperer. Right. He's had guys hired off not calling the plays before. Yeah, that was on the Jets a couple times. O'Connell, excuse me, was on the Jets a couple times too. He's also from your neck of the woods. He went to San Diego State. I feel like if their offense is decent, he'll get a job this offseason. Also, O'Connell, I think he'll be head coach soon too. He's 35.
To answer your question, by the way, exactly. I have Andrew Whitworth as my 25th tackle of all
time. So not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so my top 12 are all Hall of Fame, or all like legendary guys. They're all in the Hall of Fame except for Joe Thomas, who's not eligible yet, and Jim Tyrer, who's, you know, not in for off the field reasons. And then 13 to 24, half the guys are in the Hall of Fame, so it's sort of the borderline. 25, which is where Whitworth is, and then through 30, none of those guys are in the Hall of Fame. So Whitworth is, you know, on the edge.
He you know, but he didn't become appreciated, or maybe wasn't playing at a high
until
level
his 30s.
Until later in his career.
Yeah.
Hey, while you have your offensive line rankings, do you have Ogden number one?
All time? No, I have a number nine all time.
Oh, that's low.
I mean, Anthony Munoz was first team All Pro every single year, and Ogden, you know, was first team half the time and second team half the time. So, but it's really picking nits, obviously. Okay. It's hard to compare.
Yeah, obviously,
guys.
He's a that's probably the best UCLA Bruin to come out in the NFL other than Aikman.
You went to UCLA, Aikman, Josh?
I did, yes.
So haven't you seen some of his interviews on YouTube? By the way, speaking of retired, formerly retired Rams, my number 18 safety of all time is Eric Weddle, who just retired from this team in the offseason.
Yeah, and I think that's we do have solid.
He's a borderline
backup.
Hall of Fame kind of guy, I think.
Yeah, John Johnson is going to kind of step up in kind of the leadership role, even though he's, you know, a young guy drafted in 2017. It seems like the reports are that he is going to do that. And then we have Taylor Rapp. And then we drafted Terrell Burgess to fill that. But I think even though Eric Weddle is ancient, I do think that his contributions were super underrated last year, just his getting his intelligence, using his reads to see what the opposing offense was doing really saved us in a couple
of fantastic
situations.
Beard as well. A real Hall of Fame beard. Let's before we run out of time, and we might not even get a chance to finish this, let's do the schedule game because
what?
You said that
no, there's like 1 minute left.
Well, okay, fine. So then
eight
let's
and eight. Eight
you have no right to the
you
chase.
Have no feel for it. You have no feel.
They're
for
over under is 32 eight.
Minutes.
So are you pushing? What are you doing at that at eight?
I have them at
didn't
exactly.
Start at nine in the offseason? Well, didn't their number start at nine?
Well, it might have gone down because of negativity like Josh's.
Well, yeah, we lost a bunch of pieces.